This episode of Football 301, Matt Harmon joins me for the first all-Football 301 team. We're letting our hipster flag fly on this show. Some players that we think are underappreciated, underrated. Maybe you just wanted to highlight having a strong year. Not the Pro Bowl quality players, but maybe that step down. Good players that might get there in the future. We also start the show with a little Black Monday talk. Coordinator moves, head coach moves. Not a lot of GMs fired, but we try to figure out who's going to fill the chairs and where are some of the best options. Very fun show with Matt. See you guys in a sec. Hello and welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. I am joined by Matt Harmon today, and we are going to be talking some all-Football 301 teams, meaning nominees for guys that we think are a little underrated, underappreciated, maybe just someone we wanted to talk about and highlight. I don't know. The qualification was that for these guys. I said no Pro Bowlers, but apparently there's one, so we'll see how that goes. Charles was going to join us. We had some tech issues, but we're still going to come to consensus on these positions. Should be fun to talk about, but like I said, to join me. I haven't seen him in a couple weeks, but my guy, Happy New Year, Matt Harmon. How you doing, man?
Happy New Year to you as well, Nate. I think that will officially be the last time I wish anybody a Happy New Year here on January the 6th. But regardless, yes, no, it's good to see you. It has been a minute since I've been on this show specifically. It all kind of blends together. But yeah, I will say I think I'm the one that brought a Pro Bowler to the nominations here. And, you know, that's honestly on me. Number one, because I didn't look at the doc to see that we shouldn't have no Pro Bowlers. And secondly, I couldn't even tell you right now who is on the Pro Bowl roster, because I really don't care. So I like right away. I was like, oh, I don't even know who's a pro. Well, I know, obviously, like, I wasn't going to come with friggin' Drake May to this conversation or something like that. But yeah, I couldn't even tell you who's a Pro Bowler this year, because it's such a, I mean, everybody's going to end up being a Pro Bowler at some point, right? Like, guys will drop out. Right. Always come back to the Mitchell Trubisky Pro Bowl season. Mm-hmm. Tyler Huntley Pro Bowler. So who really cares?
David Garrard. Yeah, no, there's been a few over the years. It's one of those things too with the Pro Bowl. Like, I actually know more about who got snubbed and who made it because everyone's more mad about who didn't make it than like praising who did make it. There's a couple positions that I, you know, linebacker is always a little off with some of the voting, especially once we get to the all pros. But I thought this would be a fun way to talk about just some other guys, as opposed to just doing an all pro team and stating out some receiver stats and tackle stats. We might do that. Who knows? I just wanted to focus on maybe kind of like, I think it's very Football 301, just like blockers, guys that do dirty work stuff, role players. I got a slot cornerback in here. Just all the kind of fun positions, all the super role players, I guess, maybe that, or quality starters that we don't always highlight that maybe not be that Pro Bowl, but we want to talk about. Should be a lot of fun. Before we jump into the All Football 301 team, yesterday was Black Monday. Today is Gray Tuesday, I guess, because there's still some more movement happening today.
Charcoal Tuesday.
But we want to talk. Yeah. Right. It's you say Cobalt Tuesday?
I said Charcoal. Charcoal Tuesday.
Charcoal. Okay. Yeah. But I was trying to think, but yeah, charcoal works. That's actually probably better than anything I would have came up with. But already had one that we talked about on the Sunday show with Charles. Raheem Morris got fired. Terry Fontenot also let go, the GM. But other movement that happened yesterday, Kevin Stefanski of the Cleveland Browns fired after 6 seasons and a 5-12 finish, and a lot of chatter about the quarterbacks and their reps during training camp and beyond. Pete Carroll was fired. One and done in Las Vegas. Oh, I should also say Andrew Berry is staying on in Cleveland. Pete Carroll fired. Spytek stays. GM stays. There's a lot of that going on in the league. A lot of coaches fired. A lot of GMs hanging on, which is a whole nother discussion. But it's. I'm very curious about some of these. I'm like, hey, I thought you guys were coming in together on this. Like, why is also one guy getting scapegoated? Another one, Jonathan Gannon, dismissed after 3 seasons, which I knew was going to be a total rebuild, but it's still a barren roster and a very hurt roster. Doesn't matter. GM's still there. I already mentioned Raheem Morris. And then on top of it, a couple coordinator moves. Cliff Kingsbury left the Commanders. There's a lot of stuff, a lot of smoke coming out about it. I do want to talk with you about that. They also fired Joe Witt Jr., the defensive coordinator there. So both coordinators gone in Washington after a season from hell. And the Cowboys fire defensive coordinator Matt Eberflus, which was to be expected. I think that one doesn't shock anybody. So maybe gets a little golden parachute out of it. Matt, it's a lot of seats open right now. not a lot of candidates. I've been trying to make short lists of interesting candidates, and I'm just like, I guess, maybe. But any of these that you want to take a stab at, any of these you want that I think are interesting or think are could be interesting to find a candidate, maybe the best spot of these ones that have an open chair. A lot of these teams need quarterbacks as well, and it's not a great quarterback offseason. So any of these interest you, Matt, that you want to talk about or just think that are a little juicy to talk about?
Yeah, like, I don't know that any of them are really surprising, to be honest. I think all of them are there's a few of them. I think, you know, Raheem Morris in Atlanta, Jonathan Gannon in Arizona, I probably could have gone either way. I think you could justify staying, you could justify going, but I think the Gannon one in particular is it's tough because they just got like they never got better. They got worse. And I know that their injuries are obviously a big problem there. But as much as we talked about, oh, look, the production of the offense once Jacoby Brissett took over, he dropped back 548 times from week six on. That was 8.5 more drop packs per game than Caleb Williams, who was second in that same span. It was basically just a scam because they were always in negative game script for that team because the defense was eroding. The run game completely fell apart. So I do understand the injury part of it, but they just never got any better. So to me, that was maybe the one that I think I wasn't sure which way they'd go, but I kind of understand, like, look, we're moving on from the quarterback. We're just kind of completely wiping the slate clean here. And I do understand that. I think maybe the Kingsbury one is the biggest potential. I think people might find that the most surprising because it was less than 365 days ago that this team was in the NFC Championship. And now right. They have let go of both of their coordinators. And, you know, maybe it's sort of kind of being framed as a mutual decision by Kliff and the organization. And I do think that maybe Kliff feels he could get a better job elsewhere. He could even be a head coach. Like, that's something that I've been saying for a few months now, that there are guys who are offensive coordinators for their teams that the fan base probably wants to fire, and yet they might end up being head coaching candidates because of just the state of this cycle. I mean, you said it, like, everybody needs a lot of teams need new, if not head coaches, new offensive architects or a new quarterback or offensive line help. And it's not a great offseason for any of those three. So we were talking about it before the show. There's going to be a lot of interesting sell jobs if from front offices and team decision makers, like, oh, no, trust us, this is totally going to work out. And 6 weeks into the season, we're going to know it did not work out and was never going to work out. So it'll be really fascinating to see how those come together. But yeah, of all these, the one that maybe surprises me the most, or I'm not that shocked by it, and I have a lot of thoughts about it, is just the Kliff Kingsbury thing.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would even say, like, just the short list of coaches, like, yeah, there's not a lot of quarterbacks available in this draft. It might be a one quarterback class, depending. I mean, Trinidad Chambliss, who was super interesting day two guy, he's going back to school, got the waiver. Dante Moore didn't have it doesn't look like overwhelmingly great in the playoffs. So it looks like a one QB class in the first round at the very least with Fernando Mendoza. I'm like scouring trying to find interesting names. There's some interesting like round three guys, some round four guys that might sneak up. You know, Drew Allers got tools from Penn State. Garrett Nussmeier was a guy I was high on. He battled injuries, and LSU had a season from hell as well. But again, he's older and smaller. Cade Klubnik, I'm not super high on. So, like, again, I'm just listing all those off because it's like, all right, let's look at the free agents. Let's look at the vets. Daniel Jones coming off an Achilles. You know, like, you can maybe trade for Mac Jones. Spoilers, I might talk about him in a little bit. There's just a lot of important positions that need to be filled, of course, on every team, but there's just not a lot of people to fill those spots. Like, yeah, I know you can get creative and you can find guys, but the quarterback one is just really like, I don't know. There's a lot of QB28s out there. It's funny with the Browns, though. They don't need just a quarterback. They need offensive line. They need receiver help. The defense still, you need to keep adding to the defense. It's just looking at them. Stefanski, probably his name goes to the top of the available candidates.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I would much rather hire him than some of these other names that are getting floated out there. Matt Nagy, like, way much rather go for Stefanski. That's another thing with the Matt Nagy thing. And I do not know Matt Nagy or anything, but just looking as an outsider and you're looking at context of resume, all right, what is his selling point? That he had a good defense with the Bears, that is obviously Vic Fangio and Khalil Mack. His team fell apart. His quarterbacks got worse. the offenses got worse under his watch, and then he goes back to Kansas City and it's like been the worst of the Mahomes offenses. I don't know what the selling point for him is, but other than I know the GM in Tennessee, you know, like that's really all that I'm hearing from there. But I mean, Brian Flores is an interesting name. His name was kind of more or less blackballed, it seemed like, because he was suing the league. But I think that a lot of owners and GMs are going, well, you know, that was in the past. You know, we have to give him, he has experience coaching. He wanted Justin Herbert. We like him, right? Like, you know, that, I saw his name getting floated with the Raiders, which actually I would be really interested in, especially if they bring in Mendoza, Brian Flores on top. I saw Brian Daboll as the rumored offensive coordinator name, which I'm not so high on, but I do like a little bit of that makeup. I know it's just, it's not, especially when the interesting college names are sticking around, you know, it's not like Marcus Freeman took his name out. I don't see Cignetti going anywhere. He's in the 60s anyway, from Indiana. So it's just, again, Dan Lanning, I don't know, doesn't have an NFL experience. So just even just thinking of college names as well. It's just, and I think all these teams, they need a lot. It's not like I go in, like even the Falcons are interesting because they have some weapons, you know, as far as Drake London, Bijan Robinson, who knows with Kyle Pitts, but they also are kind of cap strapped. They don't have their first round pick. That's not super appealing. It is a fresh slate. At least you're going to get a lot of decisions on that. Matt Ryan is basically getting appointed as football czar, it seems like.
He's interviewing today for a job that they created for him, which is hilarious. He's interviewing the title's for president of football operations,
is that what the title is?
Yes, it's a new position that the Atlanta Falcons have created, and it only was created when rumors circulated that they wanted to give the job to Matt Ryan. So hilarious. That happens in the corporate world. I've definitely had jobs before where it's like, all right, we interviewed you, now you have to apply for the job online. It's like, wait, but does that mean I thought you said you were giving me the job? So it's not crazy unheard of, but it is a thing that's happening.
It's happened to me my first job as a coach with the Raiders. They had they changed the role, and it was just because of that they just created a new thing, and I was just like, sweet, like, because cool. They're like, well, we can't just have this, we already have assistant quarterback coach, so we need this. And so they just give me some like offensive assistant title that they just made up. But that's so true though. Like, I was curious because they said they moved out Rich McKay, which was, it's been a long time coming, and then they promoted I think someone else as team president. And then I was seeing, I was like, okay, so team president, or not that, GM, not that. So it's director of football operations. That's what the title is going to be. I just put it as football czar, head of football, football decision making. But it's funny because people are already starting trying to connect the dots and saying like, okay, he went to Boston College. He was teammates with Brian Flores. He was teammates with Ryan Poles, who his assistant, Ian Cunningham, is getting some interest from the GM spots, but because he knows polls, that might help him out. I just think that stuff's really funny, trying to connect the dots as opposed to just resume and what you can show and interviews and everything. And also Matt Ryan is saying that he wants to work in media still as he does this job. He wants to do the Tom Brady. And then there's Troy Aikman, who's working Monday Night Football, that also says that he's going to still work on Monday Night Football. He's helping with the Dolphins. And I think the Dolphins still have Dan Marino on the payroll to help out and give consulting jobs. So I don't know. This is just the new thing. Just bringing back old quarterbacks, make everyone feel good. So no one gets mad at them. Like, everyone just goes, no one's mad at John Elway in Denver. Everyone's just like, yeah. His time was past for there. You know, maybe that's what it is. Just like a little human meat shield with all of that. But just to wrap this up, I would say that the Cliff Kingsbury thing is interesting to me because he had earned my respect. It's not my perfect offense. It's not exactly how I would design an offense. A little too much tempo for me, a little too spread out at times. Did think that he adjusted a little bit better in Washington than he ever did in Arizona. And the run game has always been good, no matter where he's been. That's interesting to me. But also the pairing with Jayden Daniels made a lot of sense. Like, that was a great way to lift the floor and get him going into the NFL. And they're saying, the word coming out that him and DQ butted heads. DQ wants... Dan Quinn wants more of maybe a traditional offense. And then in that, my head, I'm hearing Shanahan offense. Because now you got Adam Peters making decisions, who's just basically a 49ers nut. If you play for the 49ers or coach for the 49ers, he's interested in you. So look for a Kubiak or something. But also just, I don't know. I think Jayden's accurate enough and throws well on the move, but he also tries to scramble as much as possible. Trying to make him more traditional. I just don't know. I want to see what that looks like. I think this was the best offense for him, at least this stage in his career. So curious what the next steps as they move on from that. But Yeah. Any of these spots that would, if you had to rank them, what would be your number one spot? Opening, I should say. It's not like a amazing group, but I'm just curious.
No. I think Cleveland is poisoned. I think that Atlanta is just really tough. No first round pick.
It's hard.
How excited are you about is anybody excited about Michael Penix except the two guys that they just kicked out the door? You know, I mean, he's going to be 26 years old this offseason, third reconstructed ACL. And I know about as much about how good he is as an NFL quarterback now as I did, you know, a year ago. So that's just a really tough one. They're one where I don't think either of the two quarterbacks who took snaps from them this year are going to start week one. And we're talking about a team without a first round pick and all these questions at quarterback this year. That's just really tough. I think Arizona, you can squint at it and be interesting. And I do think that I'm ready to see like a new offensive vision for that particular roster.
Yeah.
I think the best opening might be the Raiders. And I think the Raiders were abhorrent. I thought the product was terrible this year. And I said it a lot on this show, very often. And yet, I kind of like Spy Tech. I think Brady is at least, I know that he's getting a lot of crap for the way this has gone this year. That's fine.
He's going to be more engaged.
He's going to be more engaged, and it's okay if you don't hit a home run on your first swing. It's fine. Like, it's a job that I think you need to learn a little bit here. I'm still interested in that. And regardless, like, they have the first overall pick. If this is a one quarterback draft, guess what? Ain't nobody fighting you for that one quarterback. So I do think that's really a good setup there. And they have some young talent. They have Brock Bowers, Michael Mayer. They have Ashton Gentry, of course. And I still think that there are some other young, intriguing players that they took in this draft that they can obviously sit here and say, hey, the coaching staff did not even try to maximize these guys. So I think that this whole setup this year for the Raiders, Pete Carroll forced marriage with Spy Tech, forced marriage with Chip Kelly. It was just like way too many cooks in the kitchen. It's a fascinating what I said about the Raiders. It's like a fascinating thing to talk about in the offseason. And then you get into the real games and the product is abhorrent. I think there's a chance that if they just get everybody like just rowing in the same stream here, rowing in the same direction, I think that we can actually get a pretty, I don't know, I want to say good football team here, but I think we can get something going.
Something to build off of, you know, that's really what it is. I think between the Raiders and the Cardinals, I've never been more O-line coach pilled. Than what happened with those two teams. And like, just I've always have said that, you know, super important. I think obviously I think the public fan, the national fan, the general fan has realized that as much or as much more as well. But I think even those two teams and just their decisions led to a lot of trickle down, especially in the offense. Pete having his son as the O-line coach, not changing that at all. And then in Arizona, where Clayton Adams go, which I get. The Cowboys gave Clayton Adams a title bump and probably a lot of money. That's what the underrated thing with Jerry Jones is that he pays his coordinators a lot. Usually the Cowboys assistant coaches are the highest paid assistant coaches in the NFL. Really hard to pass up. So I get all that. But also the Falcons, too, just a lot kind of closing thought. They modified the deal with Kirk Cousins. So they set up March 13th as the date to make a decision on the QB's future with the franchise. So he could go back to Atlanta, but now he might be gone. You know, they're a mess. A year and a half ago, whatever it was, less than 2 years ago, they gave a quarterback $100 million and they draft another one in the top 10, and they still have a question mark at the position.
Terrible.
That's a lot of resources for question marks, man. But no, we're going to talk more and more about these teams. I think some of these teams that are in no man's land are actually even more interesting than some of the teams in the playoffs. I think the Dolphins are one of the most interesting teams to me. They haven't fired their coach or anything, but one of the most interesting teams to me because of the decisions they could possibly make. Same with these teams as well. Commanders have had great highs under Dan Quinn and just a lot of lows this past year. I want to see who they bring in. Again, I think it's going to be a Shanahan disciple just because of who the GM is and what Dan Quinn has had success under, but who knows? Maybe he gets creative with it, but we'll see. All right. We're going to take our first break. And when we come back, we're going to start with our all football 301 team for the 2025 season. See you guys in a sec. We are back. It's time for the all football 301 team. We'll start with you, Matt. You have the receiver position. So when we had, Charles had this as well, but we all nominated or gave our kind of, we led each position, I should say. Each of us, we divvied up the positions of who has the initial nominations. But because Matt and I are sickos, we also have our other definitions for the positions that we weren't tasked with. So it'll be a fun little discussion here. But Matt, I'm very curious of who you had at the receiver position for the all football 301 team.
Yeah, if we're talking about underappreciated, maybe underrated, I think it's been a little bit of a moving target as to who that guy is. I think it's at the wide receiver position specifically, I think the two names that originally came to mind, but I think because of the end of year production that they had, it's no longer a hipster pick. Like, it's gone mainstream, and those two guys would be Alec Pierce and they would be Michael Wilson. I don't think we can count those guys anymore because they went mainstream. Yeah, those are 1,000-yard receivers now. So I actually went tier down here, and I went with Parker Washington of the Jacksonville Jaguars, who which I think that's the trio of the like surprise that's wide receivers this season are those three guys. And number one, they're all prospects that I had like a little affinity for, with Parker Washington being the deepest hipster cut. The other two guys I thought were like good second, third round picks, Pierce and Michael Wilson. But, and again, specifically focusing on Parker Washington, though, he was like a day three guy that I thought could be a Bud Light Golden Tate type of player. And I think he's been much more than that so far in the NFL. Specifically this year, he's been such a good downfield receiver for this team from the slot, which obviously is what, you know, Liam Cohen manufactures a lot of space for those slot receivers. It was a big reason why I was excited about Travis Hunter potentially as the long-term slot receiver. I still think I can get excited about Travis Hunter in the future as the slot receiver for this team. But Parker Washington has made a case that he needs to stick in the rotation here because he's been that good. And he was a guy that at the beginning of the season was among that cohort of Jags wide receivers that was struggling with drops. But I think a lot of that was just more of the way he was being used as primarily like an outside take the top off the defense type of player. That's not his game. He's, you know, what, like 5'10 at 200 pounds. He's more of like a compact wide receiver. And I think getting him those free releases from the he's like a Golden Tate type, but he's just Golden Tate's weird because he became kind of a bunny hop player in Detroit, but with Seattle, he was much more of a downfield type of player. So I think it just depends on what you remember of Golden Tate when I make that sort of comparison for him. But that's sort of how Parker Washington has been. He's been more of that downfield slot receiver for this team. He's made a lot of big plays. And again, he leads the team in receiving this season, which I don't think anybody would have had on their bingo card coming into the 2025 Jacksonville Jaguars wide receiver kind of season this year. And him and Trevor Lawrence, I think, have a really good connection. And he's been really maximized by Jacoby Myers coming in here, because Myers, while he was a slot mostly player with the Raiders this season, he's been more of the movement Z guy for this Jacksonville Jaguars team, which I think is the best fit for Jacoby Myers' skill set. So that's allowed Parker Washington to be able to own that slot receiver spot. So yeah, he's a legit weapon for this team. He's not just everybody else got hurt and now he's playing. Like, no, he's been flashing all season long. And I think the comfort and finding the right role for him in the offense has really been a big unlock for him.
My short list I had for the discussion's sake, literally the names I have are Alec Pierce 1, Parker Washington 2, and then Michael Wilson 3. And my note under Michael Wilson goes, he had a good year, can't have him here. But Parker Washington, I think he's the epitome of what the football 301 team is about. Like, he's exactly it. Underappreciated, a good player that obviously is not a Pro Bowler, but like that just good starter, way better. When the ball goes this way, it's great stuff. And even underlying stats, he's like a top 20 receiver this year. So there's 118 receivers that ran 200 more routes. So when in this discussion, if I use these stats, that's the qualifiers. Parker Washington, 18th in yards per route run, 10th in explosive receptions per route, and 25th in first downs per route. So all kind of like speaking to a good number two receiver. And that's how he's played. And I think you mentioned the Jacoby Myers thing. I think that's been a big part of it, because it's the opposite of what this Jaguars receiver room has been in the past, or the recent past, where everything was very specific. I always use the term fragile. One guy got hurt, they had nobody that could fill that spot. Everybody had to be in specific spots. Christian Kirk had to be in the slot. Evan Engram had to be a tight end away from the ball and blocking, and only could be used on certain routes. Parker Washington and Jacoby Myers, it's kind of nice because they can kind of do a little bit of everything. And so when you have that, then Brian Thomas Jr. can do the stuff that he's only good at, that he's comfortable doing. And these two can kind of fill in the rest of the spaces. They fill in the lines. Yeah. So I think Parker Washington's a great nom for this. If we completed a full team, then we did three. I think Alec Pierce might be the other one. Another one I had out there, because I keep mentioning his name to you, I feel like I've talked about him just to you more than anybody else, is Romeo Doubs. Just because he's been more of like a all-improvement team, might be the best way to put it. But same stats. He's top 30 in every route. All those metrics I brought up. 20th in first downs per route. 26th in success rate per route, or successful targets per route. 30th in yards per route. 26th in explosive plays or receptions. And then actually his teammate, Christian Watson, his stats are bonkers this year.
Yeah.
But I felt like me and you would have to put Christian Watson on the All Football 3-1 team with some gritted teeth.
Well,
but yeah, I have to give him a tip of the cap, because when he was on the field this year, he was very, very good.
This was his best season by a significant margin. He was somebody I considered here too. And yeah, I think the reason you can't put Doubs on here is because Watson was so much better. And it's just like, you can't have a guy who was kind of one-upped by his teammate in this one. And I think that
that's why I kept him off.
huge credit to Watson. Like I said, this, I never saw this coming. Of all of the wide receiver surprises, like I said, I've always had an affinity for Pierce. I've always had a little bit of affinity for Parker Washington and Michael Wilson. Christian Watson is a guy that I've been critical of at times during his career, big time from a consistency standpoint, and I did not see him in the same calendar year in which he tore his ACL in January of 2025 coming back and having what I think is without question inarguably his best season as a pro. From a film standpoint, I don't care about the stats, from a film standpoint, this was the best he's been as an NFL player. And this is, like, by the way, we're talking about guys that are in year three, year four type players here with all of these guys. So it's just like, if your favorite kind of day two wide receiver, like, look, if they're a complete flame out right away, they do nothing, okay, you can sell your stock. But for these guys who just, they kind of peter around, they hang around a little bit on the depth chart, don't rule out that year three, year four, they take a pretty big leap, because that's all of these guys here, like year three, year four type players who really took a big step forward.
Yeah, Watson finished that same qualifiers. He finished fourth in yards per route run, 2.54, only behind Puka Nacua, JSN, and Luther Burden, who definitely came on this year. 10th in first downs per route, 3rd in explosive plays per route. So, yeah, it was a big season for Watson. And I'm right there with you. A lot of these guys actually were guys we were in lockstep on. You and I both had liked Pierce coming out. I think we're in lockstep more or less with him. Parker Washington was another guy I was interested in. I liked him as a late third, early fourth guy. He snuck into my top 100 that year. I was like pick 99. So a guy that I've always kind of liked. Same with Michael Wilson, but I was indifferent on Doubs. I thought I was like a same thing, third, fourth rounder. But Watson was a guy I was like, wow, you guys took him that high. Wow, he's soft. Wow, he can do this. And he's just turned into a real receiver, an explosive one at that. All right, I'm going to go on. And this is hard to do. Underrated for the position that's talked about the most and has the biggest magnifying glass on it. That's quarterbacks. And originally, I'll just be open with you. I was going to do Trevor Lawrence because I thought that was just very fitting for the All Football 301 team. But also, I was just like, all right, he's getting a little too much. Number one pick is a little too hard. I did Mac Jones for the 49ers just because.
Good one.
We're talking about underappreciated this year. And also maybe the top trade candidate this entire offseason, just mentioning all those open seats at the quarterback position. Mac Jones, all quarterbacks this year, or I should say all quarterbacks that threw 200 or more pass attempts, and there were 36 of them. Jones had 289, so almost a full season. Like 300 is like, to me, like a full season. But he finished third in dropback success rate, only behind Drake May, who might win MVP, but at the very least will be an all-pro, and Brock Purdy, his teammate. 10th in EPA per dropback, 2nd in completion rate, if you're into that kind of thing. 9th in first downs per attempt, 11th in net yards per attempt, and 11th in sack rate. And eye test, he's not as an explosive of a scrambler or a creator as Brock Purdy is, or thrower, I should really say. But he's still accurate. He can still play on time, and he can just deliver the football and operate an offense. Like, he, to me, deserves a starting spot somewhere next year with the realistic, evaluation of him that he's going to be, quarterback 18, 20, 22, 24 for you outside the Shanahan bosom. but I do think that he has shown enough throughout his career. It was one of those things where, as a prospect, I liked him. I where I thought he should have been drafted like in the 20s. It went a little bit higher. And then his first year, the Patriots kind of got overrated a little bit because of the surroundings. And then his second year, I actually started to like him more than maybe some of the public consensus. And just one of these guys that now, after watching when he played for the 49ers this year, I just thought he had some qualities. Like, he's accurate. He gets rid of the ball quickly. He understands where to go with the ball. He knows what he is. Like, he does scramble and try and create a little bit, but he also just goes like, all right, pull the cord, you know, eject when it's not going right. He's not going to get into a lot of stupid plays for you. So for teams that just need placeholders for at least a year or two, and maybe have a new regime, and you just want competence at the position, that's Mac Jones to me, but that's why I want to give him the tout here. Like, Jacoby Brissett was another name I thought about, but I don't know. That was kind of a Looney Tunes offense this year, and I like Jacoby scam. A lot, but yeah. Yeah,
it was totally. A fantasy football scam, is what that Cardinals offense was.
Maxed out fantasy football scam. It was basically Jameis Winston West.
Yes.
Yeah, Mac Jones to me, though, that all football 301 team. I really did enjoy watching him in that kind of 49ers system, even when there's backups in there, just watching him play throughout this year. So wanted to give him the tout. Do you have any other names brought up? It's hard. It's hard. Well,
First of all, on Mac Jones, I agree that he's a good candidate for this one, and he's also a good candidate to help a lot of these teams out, like a Vikings. That if you want to still leave the light on for JJ McCarthy a little bit, but you want to bring in somebody that, okay, this ain't gonna work, we can start this guy all season, he'd be perfect for that. I think Carolina, even though they made the playoffs, they should consider somebody in the Mac, maybe one step down from Mac Jones, but if it depends on just where they are with Bryce Young, he'd be another guy that to consider. The problem is he's on a 2-year contract. Like, what are you trading to get Mac Jones with all of this kind of this caveat here? But I agree that he is the top name among, if you're one of those teams, like Minnesota is a perfect one where you just want to bring in real competition and competition to the level we got to start this guy all season. That would be Mac Jones to me. Two other names to consider here. One guy who I do think is going to be an offseason talking point is Malik Willis. I know he only started one game and he only appeared in a little bit, but he did play really well. And I think he will be somebody that is actually a free agent that a team could maybe buy into the sell job that they're going to have to do. Be like, no, trust us. Like, Malik Willis is actually going to be really interesting, depending on the coach that he gets involved with. The other one is Tyler Shuck. And we have not talked about Tyler Shuck at all, but man, he's really impressed me, I guess, relative to expectations, because my expectations were pretty low. But you look at since week 9, he's 14th in EPA per dropback. In terms of adjusted yards per attempt, he is 11th. So, like, he's been a productive player. I think the offense has flowed really well with him. I think his ability to attack outside the numbers has been much better than I expected it to be. I really enjoyed his connection with Chris Olave. They tore up some pretty bad defenses towards the end of the season, and I'm not saying that it's been perfect with Tyler Shuck, but he's definitely somebody I think to consider here as a nice hipster pick for, you know, kind of football three. I don't know if I can get everybody else on board. I've been trying to get Justin Boone on board with the Tyler Shuck excitement over on the Fantasy Podcast, and I cannot get him excited about it. So I don't know if I can get you excited about it, but I've liked what I've seen out of Shuck so far this season.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, I should be victory lapping because of where I had him in the QB, like my rankings. He was QB2, I think, for me in this for my big board. It's a lot of I'm trying to be realistic with him. It's like, there's qualities there. Like, this guy can start in the league. What his ceiling is, of course, is I think it's super capped because it's just age, what he shows. But as far as like, this guy should start, be one of the 32 starters. Yeah, he's shown that to me. He showed me at least one more year, see what we got. See with just a little bit more juice on this team. I don't know. The Saints should feel pretty good about how they look throughout this year. I thought whether it was Rattler in there or Shuck, they showed some cool scheme stuff. They're getting the most out of their players. They're on like running back 5 by the end of the year. Like, they're just figuring it out. I mean, the last week, look at who's throwing to. And it still looked like a competent offense. Was it great? No, but it was competent.
Throws on the final drive. On the final drive, and I know they only had that final drive because he threw an interception that essentially kind of sealed the Falcons' win. But still, they were driving on that. And conceptually, against that coverage, it wasn't my favorite, but he still threw the interception. And again, regardless, he did come back and was pushing the ball. Like I said, and again, I know it's the Jets and the Titans, but several of those games down the stretch, he's just good old fashioned drop back in the pocket and like pushing the ball like from the far hash deep outside the numbers. Yep. So he definitely has a lot of talent. I agree the ceiling is maybe capped here, but he really impressed me at the end of the season here.
God, he actually has some similar, it just came to me, had some similarities to old Aaron Brooks, who used to start for the Saints years and years ago. Like,
wow.
It's a weird comparison that just popped in my brain, actually, as you were talking. I was just looking up his stats. But yeah, I know I've been trying to figure out what he is. But to me, I'm like, hey, this guy can start. This guy can hang in the week. I don't have as many question marks as I have like a guy like Dart, like where I'm like, I don't know if this can hold up over long term. I didn't see growth as a passer. With Shuck, I'm like, okay, there's a floor here. There's competence here. Sustainability. Like at the very least, this guy is going to be a Brissett. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like where this guy can stick in the league and be that kind of tier of a quarterback to me. It's just how high you can get with him. So yeah, no, we're kind of speaking the same language on him. All right, running back. This was Chuck. So this is going to be more of a consensus one. I have a couple names I'll throw out here, but who'd you think of for running back nominations for Football 301 team?
Yeah, the name that first came to mind to me, and it's so stupid because he's out, like the reason that I'm going to nominate him is not because of it running the football, is Kenneth Gainwell. And we've talked about this before previously.
That was one of mine too.
He's 12th in the NFL in targets per route run. 25.8% targets per route, which is up there. I mean, that's his overall players in the NFL. There's no other running back that's even close to him. And it became a little bit of a bit at the end of the season because it's just like, my God, how quickly can Rodgers get to that quick check down in the flat to Kenneth Gainwell? It cracked me up on Sunday night when Rodgers is doing this, like we're doing the signal thing and he's rubbing his stomach and everybody's like, what does that mean? And he just quickly checked the ball down to Kenneth Gainwell. I'm like, okay, so when Rodgers rubs his stomach, he's indicating to everybody, I'm going to throw my 10th check down in the flat to Kenneth Gainwell. But you know what? Honestly, he was the team MVP. Like, didn't they name him team MVP or something, something like that? For the record, for the freaking record, like they probably do not have a functional offense without Kenneth Gainwell, which is an outrageous thing to say.
I know. I actually, it's funny. We'll just say Steelers running backs because Jaylen Warren was one of mine. We'll just say the Steelers running backs is maybe the all football 301 team because of what they carried in this offense this year. Both even like underlying stats, like Kenneth Gainwell, 12th in rushing success rate among all running backs with 100 or more carries. And I think Warren's not too far behind. He's 23rd. So this is out of 49 running backs, both above 40%, which is where you want to get. I agree with you. It's been hilarious because I think Warren even has a high target share.
He does.
I know I had the stat a few weeks ago where it was like they were both above 20%. And like there was only like 9 running backs above 20%, and the Steelers had 2 of them. So that was actually my number one. I think both of those players, I like Gainwell when he was with the Eagles as a nice kind of secondary back, or a scat back type. They'd run so many crossing routes to him all the time, especially on third down. And I don't know, he's just always just been a good player. I can see why Rodgers likes certain players. Like he just kind of falls in love with certain players. Now that I think about it, I actually have a few Steelers on my short list.
Me too.
But no, Warren and now that I think about it, now I'm really looking at my list. Warren and Gainwell, though, like they made the most of it. Warren, I think, had the most missed tackles forced among all running backs this year, or at least was high up there. He is a crazy player, but he does a lot well. He can catch the ball. He's good in pass pro, and he's a tough runner between the tackles. I can see why coaches like him. So, yeah, Gainwell and Warren, I guess, would be two nominations. I also wanted to do Zach Charbonnet because I feel like this guy gets slandered a ton, especially
this.
In fantasy circles. And in real football circles, it's like, this guy's just a nice, solid B-minus player. Great in pass pro, can catch fine enough, can be explosive fine enough, can run fine enough. And then even on underlying stat-wise, he's actually pretty dang good. He's 10th in success rate this year on rush attempts and 11th in first downs per attempt. I think he just gets slandered a lot because he's not the sexiest back in the world. And because everyone likes the Kenneth Walker touches. I get it. He's a lot more exciting. But I don't know. I have an affinity for Charbonnet because I like these types of backs. They're just like solid at everything. Like these guys stick in the league for a long time. So, but I just wanted to give Charbonnet a little nomination here. And then Jordan Mason, a little tiny nomination as well. Those would be my running backs for this list. Do you have any other names that came to mind, or you want to just move on to the next spot?
The Charbonnet one's really good. I call them like coach's catnip, essentially, this type of running back. And it's just like, guess what? Sorry you spent a fourth round pick on the other running back in your fantasy draft. But this is why I kind of said, like, during the draft, fantasy draft season, my thesis on these Seahawks running backs was I wanted to be a little bit of a centrist because I think they're both good players in different ways. I thought that the run game was going to be better than it was this season, which is what led me to be excited about Kenneth Walker potentially. But that just didn't really come to pass. I mean, he still had 1,000 yards rushing and was explosive. He just didn't get any of the, you know, money touches that you want from a fantasy standpoint. I don't think the Seahawks are disappointed with Kenneth Walker. No. They really like Zach Charbonnet, and I understand why. I like watching him play. Yeah. He's a good, solid back that just doesn't do anything that really wows you, which is fine. And ended up being hey, I'll tell you what, several of my like good fantasy teams had Zach Charbonnet on it, so it is what it is.
He was the, if you want to know running back build, he was a great pick. You could find, he got you some quality starts in there, at least for me. This was a stat I'll leave it off. I mentioned he was 10th in success rate this year. It's not the end all be all stat that can be juiced up by O-line and everything, but he's always just been a fairly efficient back, and that's in between James Cook and Javonte Williams and just above Kenneth Gainwell. So again, these aren't the sexiest touches. He did have a nice long run last week against the 49ers where he just outraced Malik Mustafa. But it's just that these are the guys, and I know it can be frustrating in fantasy circles, but like real football coaches love the Charbonnets of the world. Like, and that's why he's always going to be at the worst a number two that takes 40% of the snaps. He's really trustworthy in pass protection. You trust his hands. These guys just stick. Yeah. So I agree with you. I kind of was a central. Like, I appreciate Walker and what he brings to the table. Like, don't get me wrong, but I also understand why coaches get frustrated with him because he's not great in pass protection. His just eyes have never been good, and he can kind of be boom bust with his vision. So these two complement each other very well. So in a real football sense, I like him. And I do think the run game has picked up recently. So yeah, we'll go on from there. But tight end, Matt, this is one of your positions. Curious actually what you went with here, because I my short list was a little bit all over the place. So who'd you have for the All Football 301 team here?
Okay, so I have three nominations, and it's one is a receiver, one is a blocker, and then one is a both guy. The receiver one is Juwan Johnson. Again, to go back to the Saints here, I thought he had a really nice season. Overall, he came up with some big moments. You know, he's not a perfect player. He's going to drop some footballs. He's certainly, I don't think, much as an inline player, but he was a guy that was useful as a big slot receiver for the Saints. So he's sort of a nomination for me. Then as a blocker, I know this is like, it's too obvious at this point, but I think it does have to be Darnell Washington because he's literally an extra. He's literally an extra offensive lineman, but I have to do it. The real player I want to nominate here, and the only reason I regret having it, is because it's another Jaguars player, but it's Brenton Strange, who I think really stepped up as a receiver and as a blocker. Like, that was the thing for me is I could conceptualize the idea of Brenton Strange as a move tight end, someone that they put in mismatches, they got in the slot, they did a little bit of that, and I think that was kind of the scouting report on him coming into the league, was he was going to be more of that Evan Engram variety player. But really, from the jump this season, I thought he was a real plus blocker. I know that he had a stint on IR. He had that hip injury. But if we're just talking about wire to wire, I think he was the most consistent pass catcher for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Obviously, when you got, you know, friggin' Jacoby Myers in there, he was good. Like, just he was from the moment he got there. But I'm talking about from early season, late season, he was the most consistently productive player. So I do think if we're giving it to a guy for an all-around season, I think Brenton Strange has to be the nomination here.
That's a great one. Darnell Washington was my number one name I wrote down. And even his pass catching stats are way better than I realized underlying.
Oh, yeah.
7th in successful receptions per target, or per route run, I'm sorry. And 7th in yards per route run. But yes, put plus blocker. He's the mountain that rides. But my number two name was Brenton Strange. Same.
Before you move on, I got to read off this stat. I totally forgot to do it, and I didn't want to forget. This stat I saw from our buddy JP Acosta of CBS. With Darnell Washington on the field, the Steelers have a success rate better than the Rams. With him off the field, their EPA per play is worse than the Cardinals. So that was posted in the middle of that Week 18 game. I just saw it on social media. I should have sent it to the producers. I'm sorry, my bad on that. But just that is sort of encapsulating his value, not just as a blocker, but yeah, as a receiver, 100%. I said this when he was coming out of the draft. Why would you not just throw him like 3 to 4 plays in the flat, you know, every single game, because right. He's freaking bigger than the players that are going to try to tackle him. And that was when he was a rookie. Guess what, folks? Now he's way bigger than the people who are going to try to tackle him.
He when they tackle him, it looks like an elephant in the safari when a bunch of lions are jumping on him. Like,
oh my God.
Just rumbling along, and all the lions are just bouncing off of him going every way. No, he's become more than just a meme. Like, that's the thing, is that like coming in, it's like, oh, big offensive lineman or big off or tackle that's basically a tackle, or Jesus, big tight end that's actually a tackle. Look at him run. Oh, ha, ha, ha. But actually, you could tell Rodgers loves him. Rodgers finds him. Like, if they have these plays like high lows, he's looking for number 80. And that's how Rodgers plays. He has his favorites. We already mentioned Gainwell, but I don't know. Washington has just shown more as a receiver, as a real player. Than just a meme blocker, you know, just an extra jumbo guy. So kind of a shame that he broke his arm. I think he's out now for the rest of the season, because they needed him, because he really kind of was a needle mover for him for what they want to do. The other name I want to throw in here, because Strange was another one. I agree with Strange, is that Strange finished among 48 tight ends of 200 routes, finished 9th in yards per route run, 4th in explosive receptions per route, 11th in success rate, and then 12th in first downs per route. Freaking Trevor Lawrence loves him, and I 100% agree with you. He's way better blocker than I had him graded as. When they took him, I was like, why are you guys taking an Evan Engram clone? You already have Evan Engram on your roster. This is terrible. Oh my God, Balky, what are you doing? Strange has morphed himself into such a better player, so credit to him. He's turned into just a good – like, I love the Jaguars pass catching group. Like, BTJ, Parker Washington, Jacoby Myers, and Brent Strange is an amazing top four, and then you could bring in Travis Hunter for the snaps. You're set. That's a good group. Just get some linemen in there and you're really cooking. The other guy I wanted to throw in here, and I actually thought this was going to be your in-between guy, was Colby Parkinson for the Rams. Because always been, throughout his career, a great blocker. That's why they brought him in originally. Great blocker, good blocker. Now they're ISOing him. They're giving him some of the Higbee stuff when Higbee's been out. He's among all tight ends, 48 tight ends with 200 routes. Second and successful targets per route run, and 4th and first downs per route run. Part of that is just how efficient the Rams offense is. I get that, but he's more than just a blocker. Why? He's turned into just like a good receiver along with all the blocking stuff. The underlying stats will never get juiced up because of the other receivers that they have and all that. But man, he's really morphed into just a good quality all around tight end. So I wanted to give him a nomination too. As we talk about this, might not make the graphic, but if you listen to the pod, you know that Colby Parkinson gets in there. I'm going to go on to interior offensive line. And I didn't just have a guard or a center. I have a guard and a center and plenty of other guys I want to talk about. But interior offensive line, all right, we'll start with the guard. This guy has played multiple positions for an offensive line that's been battered, that's shuffled around guys, and kind of have found their groove in the back half of the season. And that is Titus Howard for the Texans. Now, I would never picture him as a guard coming out. I just thought you were a right tackle. Okay, you're stuck there. Fine, right tackle. He's turned into like a good guard. And the Texans offensive line's improved. It's not amazing, but they've improved in the back half of the year. They still had some injuries late. Trent Brown got hurt. But it speaks to how good and how versatile Titus Howard is. I have him at guard, but he played tackle when Brown was hurt. He played fine. He plays well. But he's a good guard. He's aligned several spots. He allowed 0 one-on-one sacks as a guard this year on 251 pass blocking snaps. He allowed the second lowest pressure rate as a guard in the entire NFL. Only Tyler Smith was better in that category. And not just saying as a guard, which is only when he was lined up as a guard, not including the tackle snaps. So I wanted to give him just a little discussion point because he's a real quality player. Ursary is going to be a good left tackle. I like what I'm seeing there as a rookie day two guy. But Howard's probably the best, most consistent lineman and really the key cog because of what the versatility that he provides and being a plus player in those spots. So, yeah, I want to give Titus Howard a shout out. And then at center, because I love talking center, is probably one of my favorite positions, if I'm being honest. I'm not even trying to be a hipster saying that. I love watching centers. Zach Frazier, center for the Steelers. I the all-pro position and the Pro Bowl in the AFC is actually loaded at center. Like Aaron Brewer could have been a nomination here, but I think Aaron Brewer should be an all-pro this year at center. So Aaron Brewer from the Dolphins. I like really honestly should be getting this award, but I think I'll be having him on my all-pro team. So this is just me, yada, yada, yada. But whatever, Aaron Brewer gets a nomination as well. But Zach Frazier is a very good guard or center for the Steelers. Handles all the protections, handles all the pre-snap operation. Good in the run game, good anchor. He doesn't, you know, big guys don't bully him around like some undersized centers. Great climbing to the second level. This is more eye test scouting evaluation than just numbers I can throw at, but his numbers are great too. Rookie year and this year, as far as allowing pressure rate, and that's with and without Rodgers. Last year, when it was Fields and Russell Wilson running around, it was still low. And now with Rodgers getting rid of the ball quick, it's still low. But yeah, I have to give him my all football 301 team because he's a great player. And I actually think him and Brewer is so underappreciated nationally and how good they're playing at center. Just AFC centers, there's quite a few of them. And then I have some other nominations too. But any others that you wanted to throw in here outside of those two, Matt?
Yeah, I didn't want to steal your thunder because you were in the middle of it. But yeah, Aaron Brewer was the guy that I picked here. So yeah, and you're right. I was kind of surprised he didn't make the Pro Bowl when I found out that one of the – well. My stupid Pro Bowl nomination is actually forthcoming here. But yeah, when we were talking about it, I just looked it up. I was like, he didn't make the Pro Bowl this year, which I get it. It is a pretty loaded center group in the AFC, but and the Dolphins were not a fun watch. And you know, maybe the voters are not excited about checking out that Miami Dolphins offense, but they should be. That run game was sick to end the season. They're a team that they're a team that I know this is not the first time it's been mentioned. Other people have come up with this, but yeah, if they added Malik Willis in the offseason, I'd be really interested to see, like, just give us one fun, weird season with Malik Willis as the quarterback, add to the run game with Devon Achane and what they were doing up front. Like Jonas Savanaya was a guy too. He doesn't make this list because he hasn't been that good over the course of the season, but in the back half of the year, I really thought he took a step forward because at the beginning of the year, I'm like, my God, yeah, Brewer's awesome, but the guard plays not great, especially Savanaya, who they gave up picks to go get because he was supposed to be the best system fit here. And that really paid off later on in the season. So yeah, that interior of the offensive line for Miami, not so much the interior, the left side of the offensive line definitely stood out as the season went along here. So yeah, Aaron Brewer was definitely the guy, like wire to wire, I thought was the best of this group, was good in protection, was a really awesome run blocker. So definitely somebody that I think I love the Frazier nomination. I do, but I do think Brewer, because he didn't make that Pro Bowl team, probably does deserve the title here.
Yeah, I know. I have no qualms with that. Like that was what was hard for me because Aaron Brewer would have been my answer, but I was like, but I also regard him higher. So it's hard to I'm playing games with my own nominations here. But no, I'm glad.
You're hipstering yourself in this one. You're boxing yourself into a hipster corner here.
It's good to see. Like, of course, you know, Brandon Thorne, media wise, is probably the authority on offensive line. And him and I have just been part of the Brew crew ever since. Really, I liked him in Tennessee, but he's been just a weapon in Miami because it's a perfect type of offense for him, using his athleticism, using his smarts and everything. Just a great player. There's another Dolphin I'm going to bring up. Actually, a couple more Dolphins I'll bring up, but they have added talent in weird ways. But him and Jordan Brooks, that linebacker, I maintain have been two of the best free agent signings by any team over the last couple of years. I thought those were two of they didn't break the bank on either. And teams are dying to find inside linebackers and center, and nobody wanted to. Like Tennessee went, no, we're good with Aaron. Bill Callahan likes big centers, so I get that. But he's like, oh, no, we're good with you, Aaron Brewer. We're going to give Lloyd Cushenberry the highest paid center contract of all time. And Cushenberry's been fine, but that's scouting. That's self-evaluation. Like, why don't we just keep paying this guy $6 million or $8 million as opposed to breaking the bank for the other guy that we don't know? So that's always a discussion of the stuff I always like to talk about. Was there other, hold on. I had a couple more before we move on to tackles, which is just as exciting. Oh, another Steeler, Mason McCormick, right guard. Good player. Want to give him a shout out. Jonah Jackson. He's already made a Pro Bowl in his career, so that was a little hard. Not making it this. I don't know. I don't think he made it this year. Again, don't know all the spots. Yeah, because I know his teammate did. But Jonah Jackson also had a good year, and Kingsley Suamataia, the left guard for the Chiefs. Those were kind of my other little nominations. Kind of just had good quality years. I'm bringing them up. Again, a lot of Steelers. All right, offensive tackle. How about you throw out some nominations here?
Yeah. By the way, I think Damian Lewis deserves consideration for Panthers guard, deserves some consideration for interior offensive line as well, which transitions when he was me on the
field,
to
they were a wreck.
Yeah, complete wreck, which transitions well actually to the offensive tackle group. I think Taylor Moten, Panthers right tackle, deserves consideration here. Yes. He's just he's been a steady Eddie guy for that offensive line for a long time, and he had a couple injuries this year, but he has definitely been somebody that has just been solid in that spot. And that offensive line, when they're all going together, and they had a lot of injuries, they shuffled through the guard, the right guard spot, they shuffled through the center spot this year, did Carolina, but Moten was generally out there for most of the season, as was Lewis, and those guys absolutely kick ass. Lewis especially in the run game this year was an ass kicker for sure. So those two guys I think deserve consideration at those two spots. Other tackles I wanted to throw out here, again, god, this feels like the 100th time we've mentioned a Steeler, but Dylan Cook, the backup left tackle there for the Pittsburgh Steelers, I think deserves deserves consideration. Troy here
deserves a nomination too.
Deserves nomination too. Yeah,
no,
it's like, how do you win in the NFL when you have the old folks home at wide receiver? You have this great offensive line group and interesting running back catching passes and the human mountain at tight end. That's how you get it done. That's what you do. So yeah, it's, hey, that's the Steelers. They're weird, but they are good where it matters, which is in the trenches. That's for sure. And then I think a guy who's, you know, shooting high here, would be Darnell Wright of the Chicago Bears, also deserves a nomination here. I thought he took a big, big leap this season, but I'm actually kind of surprised he didn't make the Pro Bowl as well. But of course, he didn't make the freaking Pro Bowl over the big names, you know, Penei Sewell, Tristan Wirfs, and Trent Williams there.
I know. I actually thought this would be the year he sneaks in because, okay, Trent Williams got banged up. Sewell kind of was banged up throughout the year, had a little bit of a down year. Wirfs still great. Wirfs, Wirfs missed the first month of the season and got hurt later in the season, too. Yep, yeah, yep. I know, but Pro Bowl's Pro Bowl. But I'm right there with you. I thought Darnell Wright, really outside of one game, just was quality throughout the year. The Bears' offensive line's great. Like, they just have to figure out left tackle. Well, Ozzie Trujillo, but he was hurt last week. But you could have said any of those guys, so I'm right there with you. Troy Fontenot was another one. I liked him as a prospect. I had him as like a top 12 player as a prospect, and now he's stayed healthy this year. He looked good at right tackle. So yeah, the Steelers' offensive line really good. Just said everybody on their offensive line. Their left guard made the Pro Bowl, and that's the guy we're not even bringing up. The guy that was a surprise for me watching him, and really just because this team, they always get the most out of their offensive line. It's kind of, they make some interesting decisions. Like, they'll pay Joe Noteboom and then just bench him a year or two later. And that's Warren McClendon, the right tackle for the Rams. He started most of the season because Rob Havenstein, who I played with at Wisconsin, aka he's getting old, is, you know, kind of he's battling injuries. He's one of my buddies from Wisconsin. He really is. That's all you need to know. Him and I used to go to bars together at Wisconsin. That's how long he's been in the league. He was a few years younger than me, but he is a great, he came into the into Wisconsin over, I think he might get mad at me for saying this. I think I brought this up before, but he was like 400 pounds. But he played lacrosse in high school. And I just want to, I've asked him before, I was like, can I see film of you playing lacrosse at 400 pounds or like 390? And he's always like, I wasn't 400 when I played lacrosse though, because I lost weight during that. I'm like, so what were you, 375? Like, you know, 370? I still want to see it. Like, a dancing bear out there just whipping that stick around. Warren McClendon literally allowed the lowest one-on-one pressure rate among all offensive tackles this year. Did not know that stat until I looked it up for the show. But still, I wanted to bring him up anyways because there was no drop-off. I actually thought he played better than Rob this year. And I really just think he's a nice quality right tackle. Another day three pick showing up for the Rams. And yeah, I got to nominate him because he's just been a good quality tackle. Fontenot, the other one. And the other one is another Dolphin. You were mentioning the left side of the Dolphins offensive line, I think, a second ago. Patrick Paul. He's turned into a good player. And I was always higher on him because he had tools and traits that I love. He was tough, and people talked about his character being pretty good. His hands were crazy bad at Houston. Like, that was the thing. His hands were awful. But my argument was, well, he's winning with bad hands. If you teach him hands, then, and that's the thing that you should be able to correct. Offensive line coaches in the NFL usually can correct that. Well, let's see what he's got. And to me, true weapon at left tackle. Great run blocker. Gets to the second level. Can pull. Good in pass protection. He's got anchor. He's got length. I actually think he's on his path to being a Pro Bowler down the road. I thought he was kind of underrated as a prospect because of his tools, but he's turned into his polish has come quicker than I expected in an environment that I didn't think would be adding polish, if that makes sense. I didn't think like a young projecty guy going to the Dolphins line that just like seems always just like whatever. Like, it's been very encouraging to see what he has become and just really what the Dolphins has helped turn him into and what he's done. So I want to give him a nomination as well. It's kind of an underappreciated left tackle in this league. Again, it's hard to find underrated tackles because usually if you're pretty good, we're going to talk about you and bring you up. So, but I just want to give Paul one more little tout before we move on. All right.
Yeah, that's a good one.
That's a line. Thanks. Yeah, I know. Dolphins. I think maybe that's our consensus. Dolphins. Sneaky fun. Sneaky fun. I'm curious what they do with Mike McDaniel, but they had some sneaky fun players on there. All right, we're going to take that last break, and then we're going to go on to the dark side of the ball, defense for the Football 301 team. See you guys in a sec. All right, we are back. We're going to start the edge position, defensive ends, outside linebackers, that good stuff. I have two because there's two edge players, and I can't help myself. I have plenty I want to talk about. I'll start with Derek Hall. Seahawks edge player. He only has two sacks this year. So, Nate, why are you bringing up Derek Hall with two sacks this year? He has a pressure rate that's about the same as Danielle Hunter. He has 18 run stops, which is the tackle that results in an unsuccessful play for the offense. That 12.7 run stop rate is sixth among all edge defenders, just above Will Anderson Jr. and Trevon Walker. Only one missed tackle this entire year. He has the same run stop rate, which leads to a gain of 0 yards or TFO, as Jared Verse. All these stats I just brought up, I didn't know this until I looked it up because I just was going to bring up Derek Hall. Anyways, this guy is a mauler, just a football player, and I have to bring him up. The Seahawks have maniacs everywhere. They have goblins and demons at every position. Hall is just one of these guys that kind of encapsulates what they are. Good against the run, good against the pass, destroys tight ends in one-on-one. Just a strong mauler at the edge position. I love these types of guys. Like, I love more than just the bendy freaks at edge. I love these guys that just do stuff. They just wreck the game. Like, they just make it hard on whoever's trying to one-on-one block them. And I think Derek Hall kind of like epitomizes that, the Seahawks defense. One of the many good players on here. Again, not a superstar, but as far as a good starter or a high-end role player, Hall is that all the way. So I had to give him a nomination. And I'm going to bring up a former, I think, Pro Bowler, but also a former number two overall pick, Chase Young. Talked about him getting 10 sacks the other day. Dude, Chase Young is stacking several really quality seasons in New Orleans. I know his knee is going to scare teams off. That's why no one really looked at him this offseason. Just look at his underlying stats. Eye test-wise, really disruptive. Maybe not to that all-pro quality we thought because he's had the injuries. But man, this guy is turning into almost like a clowny kind of career. Like, former high-end guy that's more turned into like a really good number two type. But for the Saints, 10 sacks, third highest quick pressure rate of all edge players this year, 18.3% overall pressure rate, which is fifth among all edge defenders this year. And also, fun little stat, the second fastest get-off of any edge player this year, only behind Myles Garrett, who is to be expected at number one. But I got to give Chase Young a shout out because I know New Orleans is kind of a funky team. They're interesting and everything, but Chase Young has really been a standout player. Carl Granderson too, as well, another edge player for them. But Chase Young, I have to give him a tout to make this team because of just what he's done this year and really stacking up a couple of nice years in New Orleans.
Yeah, Chase Young was one of my nominations as well. Nice. I think he's had a really strong last few seasons. He's really been a good fit in New Orleans, and it's just a lot of pleasant surprises for the Saints team. You know, Chris Olave being one of the most productive receivers in the NFL. He's always had the talent to do it. Now he's got the opportunity to do it. Shuck over there as well. I think the offensive line's been solid, but Chase Young on defense has absolutely been super disruptive. And yeah, just I totally agree with just the eye test part of it. Like, anytime you watch that Saints defense, he's consistently making things happen. And yeah, just really good nomination. Yeah, he was one for me. The other one for me that I was going to throw out there was Nick Herbig of the Pittsburgh Steelers, which,
yeah,
you know, he's always kind of in TJ Watt's shadow, but he had a couple of monster plays in week 18, so timely one for him. But he's just one of the best disruptive players in terms of the edge position, like outside of the big names. And yeah, like, I've had my issues with that Steelers defense, and I've made that pretty clear, and they're still really frustrating on the back back end. Not going to be bringing up a lot of secondary players for the Pittsburgh Steelers in this discussion. That being said, I think when you look up front, they've got a lot of really good players there. Herbig is one that I don't think gets enough national recognition.
It's all those Badgers they got, man. Herbig, TJ Watt, Keanu Benton, who played like out of his mind last week.
Crazy.
And then they got Derek Harmon in there now. Yeah, he's Oregon, but you know, same thing. But just another young defender. Maybe that's what it is. The Steelers secret sauce is just like have all these types of players, these gritty and glue guys. And that's why we're like, man, Tomlin does it again. Well, if you stack your team with a lot of these guys that we watch on film and look at stats and go like, he's actually pretty good. Like that helps. Maybe not, you don't have a bunch of A's, but you have a bunch of B's and B minuses. That's not the worst thing in the world. Herbig was another name on my short list. Zaven Collins for the Cardinals was another one. He's really turned into a quality player. Not like that defense was perfect for him, but like just he's a cool kind of skeleton key player in the front seven. Just can be an edge rusher, can line up inside, can play off ball, can drop at the coverage. He can run vertical in coverage. He can run to the flat, plays the run well, could be a mismatch against tight ends. That's a player I just think has become underappreciated because, the Cardinals are the doldrums of the NFL, and I get it. I'm the only one that talks about him. His teammate Josh Sweat also had a great year, but again, Cardinals defense fell apart. And then Al-Qaeda Muhammad for the Lions has turned into a really nice player, so I just want to give him a little shout out here. All right, defensive tackles, what do you got? Nominees for this position, Matt Harmon.
The one I really wanted to make a case for here was Kobe Turner of the Los Angeles Rams. He is a guy that I think has always been sort of a supporting actor maybe for that pass rush there in Los Angeles, but I think was super disruptive this year. Tons of hurries. I believe he had like 40 off the top of my head if you're looking at PFF numbers this year. So yeah, he was really disruptive and just, again, I think took a level jump. And I think you got to give somebody from this the Rams front here a ton of credit, because that was a unit that, and I have questions about their back end as well. Certainly like if they're going to get got in the playoffs, it's going to be because that secondary gave up one too many big plays. By the way, we saw them do that against the team that they're playing this weekend in the NFL playoffs, about a month ago against Carolina Panthers in Carolina. So, hey, I know nobody's given the Panthers a chance, and you know, I'm not picking the Panthers to win that game, but it is something that has happened very, very recently where that secondary came back to bite them in the ass. That could happen, but if it doesn't happen, it's going to be because the front consistently took over, you know, 3+ games in the playoffs here. And specifically, I think Kobe Turner, like I said, is a guy who is really like powerful player, gets off the ball really, really extremely fast. I like a lot of what I saw from him this year, and I think he's got to get some credit as a level jumper.
Love that. That's a great one. I know this is kind of a fun position. I can't bring up Tierra Tart again as much as I want to, but I'm going to nominate him here because he's just such a good run defender, all that stuff. I don't know. He's now like, he's like a goon in hockey. Like that's really what he is. Maybe that's why I have some partialness to him, but he's a great run defender, all that. So I have to give him a nomination because he's always going to be the perennially all underrated team as he just stacks up 1 year deal after 1 year deal because no one seems like wants to deal with him. There's a couple other guys though. There's, DJ Jones for the Broncos, kind of a undersold player, undersold component of that defense because he is so beefy, can hold up on double teams and have some disruption as well on the interior for a defense that he kind of frees up a lot of other guys like Zach Allen and stuff, just lets them kind of do what they want to do. So I want to give him a shout out. Jalen Redmond for the Vikings. Gotta change his number. He's got a center's number, and I just it's hindering him for me. But good player for a guy that just undrafted and has turned into just a good starter. And I mean, he has stats that back it up. Some of the numbers get juiced in the Vikings defense, but I test every week. He's making plays, disruptive plays where he's beating a guy, slant across your face, just constantly making plays. You know, when a defensive tackle is making plays, especially when they're undrafting, wearing number 61, is when these commentators are bringing him up during the games. Like when Tony Romo is bringing him up. And, they're not going to always notice defensive linemen. But when you're going like, there's Redmond again, like they even are kind of like noticing him, that's how you kind of know. Because when you watch film, you're like, who the hell is 61? So Redmond, and then the last guy, I can't even say his name, Tommy Togiai for the Texans, another kind of underrated player for that defense. But I could go on and on. Again, just like centers, like defensive, like good starter, non all pro defensive tackles is one of my favorite positions because you can just really find guys, and guys in certain roles are better than others. So all these guys, I don't know who would be our actual consensus pick, but I don't know. I kind of like yours. But all these guys, I just have to give a shout out because sometimes they don't rack it up in the box score, but these guys are important for the team. So got to give them a shout out on the All Football 301 team.
Yeah, I think the ones that you went with there are, I mean, I don't know, you know, whoever you want to do is the headliner, but I think the ones that you went with there actually are, it's a really good lesson that those are the glue guys of really good defenses. All the ones that you just threw out there, for the most part, like those are some of the best defenses in the NFL, and nobody's leading with, oh yeah, check out the interior defensive lineman, but it is a position that really, really matters. And I think when you watch a good defense and they don't have good interior defensive line play, you can really feel it. Like they're, Look at some of these teams we're talking about here, like Rams defense, Steelers defense. I have significant questions about some of the secondary spots on that team, but I don't have any doubts that they can take over a game and they can really just smother you out as an offense because of, obviously they have some good edge rushers as we've talked about too, but the good interior defensive line play that those teams offer up. Obviously, you know, Cameron Hayward, we're not talking about, it's underappreciated on 301, but that's a big one for Pittsburgh. Like it's a big lesson to me that I think like that's a glue. Those are the glue positions of a really good defense.
Yes. And it's one of these that teams, the Cowboys, always under address until it's too late. And you don't have to, it doesn't have to be, it's a really good defensive tackle class actually this year, but you don't have to go first rounder. You don't even have to go second rounder. You just need a guy that can eat blocks and hopefully have a little bit of pass rush juice. And I think sometimes, and I admit I can be like this sometimes, when you're scouting guys in college, it's like, all right, well, is he going to get me 4 or 5 sacks? Well, you can't play. It's more like, well, no, run it. You're going to face 20 to 30 run snaps every single game. You need a guy that can eat those snaps. Well, you just do. DJ Jones, 6th round pick. Tommy Togai, 4th round pick. Tyre Tart, undrafted. Jalen Redmond, undrafted. Like, but you need these guys. I guess Tyre Tart would be probably my nomination just because he's kind of a bit for me. But I don't know. Jalen Redmond might be a fun one too. We'll talk. We can make a 4-3 defense. You just got the 2 defensive tackles. Yeah, sure. You're at 2 edges.
Well, we need 2. We definitely need 2. And I actually do think if we went Kobe Turner and Tyre Tart, like that's a great, like a pocket pusher and a run stuffer. So I think we can go with it that way.
I'm liking this. Yeah. We got Derek Hall against defense, Chase Young to get the passer. Look at this front we're building.
That's not bad. Last point just on defensive tackles. The Panthers, 0% chance they make the playoffs if Derek Brown doesn't play this year. Like 0%. That's just how important like interior defensive linemen are right now.
Yeah. No, absolutely is. No, that's a great point. Well, just look at like the Packers' chances. I went from, oh yeah, they're a contender to me 6 weeks ago to like shaking my head. They have no defense tackles. And I know guys got hurt, but it's like even with Devontae Wyatt out there, it's like they just didn't have the beef to kind of hold it up. I like Carl Brooks and stuff, but it's just not that type of guy. You need these guys that can just eat blocks. So yeah, we'll go a nice little 4-3 there. I guess the other receiver, if we're going to go on offensive side, so we had Parker Washington as one. Do you want to go Alec Pierce as our second receiver, or did you want to go, who would be the other one? Maybe Michael Wilson? No, that might be too good. I want to go Alec Pierce and Parker Washington as our 2 receivers.
Who do you think had a better year this year, Alec Pierce or Michael Wilson?
Wilson. Oh, I don't know, though, but
I don't know.
Because Wilson got some some cartoon numbers there, and Pierce is just dunking on guys no matter who the quarterback was.
Yeah. I see 47 catches and 1,000 yards. I think we go with Pierce. Think Pierce was.
It feels right, too. That feels complete for us because I feel like we've talked about Pierce, just you and I, for like 5 years now. So I feel like it's a nice bookend.
Plus, he's like true X, you know, so I think that's good for 3.
We got the Z,
like
we got the X. We got Strange there. You know, if we want to go 12 personnel, then we got Darnell Washington if we want to go with the second tight end. Look at this is a well-rounded team here. All right, let's get to off-ball linebacker.
The Steelers. I mean, it's a mid quarterback. Good in the trenches.
Hey, Parker Washington's better than Roman Wilson or Scotty Miller.
Oh, 100%.
All right, linebacker. Off ball linebacker.
Okay. Here's where I screwed up. I had no knowledge that Jack Campbell was a Pro Bowl player. I had no knowledge that. Yeah, I didn't know. Listen, I didn't know. Okay, I did not look at the Pro Bowl roster. I looked at one tweet when they came out about who the wide receivers were and thought, yep, no reason to argue online about that. Let's keep it moving, baby. And that was it. That was all the discourse. That was all the consumption I did of the Pro Bowl rosters. So I apologize. But yes, I did have Jack Campbell as my leading nomination here. He was awesome this year. He was really player for a defense that I think has gotten underappreciated for its efforts this year because everybody got hurt. But Jack Campbell was awesome. It's not just that he had a bunch of tackles. He's not doing the Devin White thing out there. I think he's a real deal awesome starting inside linebacker for this Lions team. Like I said, he was really just good against the run. I thought solid in coverage as well. Good season, good third season here for Jack Campbell. I just honestly didn't realize that he was a Pro Bowler. So if we want to go a few tiers down here, I think Edger Cooper is an interesting nomination. I also think if we're going to try to go maybe a little bit more deeper, I think DeMarco Jackson of the Chicago Bears actually had a really nice season this year. A lot of injuries, of course, in that Bears defense, but he's somebody that definitely stood out when you watched that unit by far not a perfect defense, another defense that I think could screw a good solid team in the playoffs, that Chicago Bears defense. But I think he was a guy that really identified sort of what they are when they're going well, which is attack the football, fly around. That is. I sort of think what he kind of embodies that identity for this team.
Jack Campbell's one of those where when they draft him in the first round, I thought I had him as a second, like round two guy. I kind of like talked myself into it. I was on Bill Barnwell's show. I can still remember. I was on talking with him about it. And I was like, you know, linebacker's hard, man. And there's not a lot of guys that can play every down. It's big enough to do it and can run. And I thought film wise, he was just more of a better athlete than actually like football player, which is, you know, ironic coming from Iowa and all that. And then I was like, I don't know, this is a guy I would bet on because at the very least I get a fine starter, and it's really hard to find fine starters at this position. But every year just gets a little bit better, gets a little bit more cleaned up, becomes a little bit more dynamic as opposed to just like, oh, I'm there, make a tackle, boom, as far as creating big plays for the defense. So like, he's a Pro Bowler, so it's like automatically disqualified. But
yeah, we can't have him lead the list.
He's a legit dude.
I apologize.
It's okay. I threw in the no Pro Bowlers right at the very end. So but he's awesome. I really like Jack Campbell. I do. I think as a run defender, he's good. And then in coverage, he's gotten better as far as just feel for space. Like he can run, but it's just understanding how to fill out the zones or how to carry guys and everything like that. So yeah, he's turned into a real quality player. It's this year's draft class is loaded at linebacker. It's different than Campbell. Those guys have tape that's shown that they are like can handle this. So whether it's the Ohio State guys, Reese and Sonny Styles, whether it's CJ Allen from Georgia, those guys for a few years have shown they have kind of more of all around qualities when they hit the ground running. And once they hit the NFL, Campbell was almost like a projecty linebacker. But like not a projecty linebacker, like Edgerrin Cooper is more like 225. Like he's huge. Campbell is tall and big. So yeah, it's kind of like this is all they could have hoped for when they drafted him. It's kind of played out exactly how they hoped. My guy, I had Jordan Brooks because I just think he's perennially underrated. I brought up Aaron Brewer already, but Jordan Brooks, even stat-wise, this isn't just eye test, third in run stop rate. So again, that's how many tackles led to a unsuccessful play for the offense. So he's third. So it's not, there's empty calorie tackles guys can have. I call them the late career Ray Lewis tackles. Jump on the pile, get the tackle, but the guy gained 7 yards already. But hey, or Bobby Wagner, I guess this year. First in stuff rate, which is TFLs and gains of 0 yards. I think Brooks is good in coverage. He can carry receivers vertically. I actually think he's legitimately one of the best linebackers in the game, and he just doesn't get talked that way. I don't understand how the NFL views him. He's one of these guys that's so confusing for me. Because it's like when he became a free agent, I'm like, man, someone could really get him for like a 3-year deal, pay him decent money. And he's like, he could barely get any. He got nothing. I don't understand it. One of the best linebackers in the game. So I guess Jordan Brooks would be it. The other guy, though, underrated guy, Cedric Gray, Titans linebacker. I believe he was from North Carolina. I graded him. I had him as a round 3 guy. just a run and hit type of guy, good athlete, can move. Came along this year, not putting a lot of great situations in that Titans defense, could get himself in trouble with some missteps. He's second in run stop rate, that again, successful play for the defense, only behind Jack Campbell, first in run stop rate. So top three is Campbell, Cedric Gray, Jordan Brooks. And to me, eye test wise, I'm like, yeah, that kind of seems right. Like these guys are efficient tacklers and they read the run game well. So those are my nominees here. I guess Jordan Brooks would be the headliner, I guess, if we had to do the, if we're doing the graphic for this stuff. But I love talking about Jack Campbell. I don't get to talk about him like just individually. So this is a nice excuse to talk about him. Moving on to corners. We're almost there. DBs to round this out. That's my position. Outside corner. This guy, kind of a meme at this point, but actually I swear he's good. And I know he gets dunked on. I know bad plays seem to happen all the time. This guy is a good player. That's Riley Moss, corner for the Broncos. No corner in the NFL has been targeted more than Riley Moss, which is a Patrick Surtain stat. 115 targets this year. He's been targeted 115 times. That's as many targets this year as CeeDee Lamb got. CeeDee Lamb got 117 targets. Devontae Adams got 114 targets. Riley Moss has been targeted that much. He allowed a QB rating of 83.5. He allowed a 53% completion rate, which I think is significant for how much man coverage they play. He allowed a success rate of 41.7%. That's a good mark. Elite is sub 40%. So he's just almost to that high end number. He's just better than Derek Stingley and Josh Jobe, who played well for the Seahawks when he was out there. 33% of the time he's targeted. These are all from Next Gen Stats. It's a tight window target. League average is 24%, so about 10% higher than average. He has 38, I know he's most targeted receiver, but he has 38 tight window targets, which is the most in the NFL. Just above Quinion Mitchell, who should be a locked in first team All-Pro, Tyson Campbell, who played well for the Browns, Mike Jackson, who actually had a sneaky good year for the Panthers, PS2, his teammate, and Kamari Lassiter, who played very well for the Texans, might be a Pro Bowler this year. So Riley Moss, I and this is not a meme. This is not a thing. I get a ha 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 white corner and everything. He's a good player. Like he actually is. It's just that he gets targeted so much that bad things happen to him. Like that's just what it is. I know I get that. I watch him on film though. I'm like, oh no, this guy's legit. Like this guy is very good. And the stats kind of bear that out. This at the very least a good corner. And then I have a slot nomination because I can't help myself. Jalen Petrie, Texans, targeted 59 times in the slot. He allowed a QB rating of 58.9, best among all slot corners. He had 12 PBUs, 4 interceptions, and a 34.3 EPA allowed, negative 34.3 EPA allowed when targeted. Easily the lowest allowed in the NFL this year. Negative 0.54 EPA per target. So he was targeted 59 times, and every time a quarterback targeted him, it was half a point lost for the offense. Tremendous player. If Jordan Lewis stayed healthy, he probably would have been my nomination here, but I think Petrie's been a little bit more dynamic there. So I wanted to give him a shout out as well. But any that you want to throw in here, Matt?
Yeah, I also had outside corner and slot corner, and Petrie was my slot corner for this one. Nice. And yeah, he's not only all the coverage stats that you threw out there, but he's also just like a tenacious player as well. Yeah. Like he'll lay the wood. He's such a fascinating player, man. He stood out to me for years, like just watching, you know, receivers go against the Texans defense where he can hang in one-on-one coverage against really these like twitchy slot receivers. But then you will see him come up and club wide receivers as well. So, yeah, he's definitely somebody that I think deserves this one. And then for outside corner, I went with DJ Turner of the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, he's somebody that I don't think gets enough talk outside of like fantasy circles because he became the rare. This stuff is much, it matters much less in fantasy than it did, you know, 5 and certainly like 8 years ago, that he became one of those rare corners that's just like you didn't really start your guys when he went against DJ Turner, because number one, the Bengals were so atrocious defending every other position. But I think that's part of it. I think that does lead to some of the stats, you know, allowed.
Yeah, I mean, just target the linebackers one more time.
Oh, truly, just I mean, yeah, tight ends every single week. It was just hammer them with tight ends. But yeah, anytime outside wide receivers went against it, they didn't necessarily have their biggest production games, because I think Turner is a really sticky player in coverage. He's good at the catch point as well. He's got a lot of pass breakups, so definitely somebody that I think deserves nomination here as well.
That's a good one. I like that one. All right, You know, I don't want to nominate him for this, but James Pierre for the Steelers has been like a weirdly good starter for them when he's been on the field at outside corner where he got hurt. I know, but I just have to bring this. Second lowest QB rating allowed. I know this is an end-all be-all, but like how they play this kind of matches. Mm-hmm. Only allowed a 44%. He allowed 16 catches this year. He had 11 PBUs. I don't know. That's fascinating to me. 36 targets, 11 PBUs. I don't know. That's just crazy high numbers to me. So I don't know. I just want to talk about. And then Jordan Lewis, like I mentioned, second fewest EPA allowed. Him and Petrie are kind of 1-2 for me on this nomination. I think Cooper DeJean is slot one. But like these guys played very, very well this year, along with Derwin James for the Chargers, another guy out there. Monterrick Brown as well played well for the Jags. All right, safeties to close out the show. Matt, throw a name out there to headline it.
I did not have like a lot of good names for safeties. I was totally gonna rely on you for this one. I mean, there's guys that I think aren't Pro Bowls. I mean, Xavier Watts from Atlanta, I think, but he's had such highlights recently. I think he's somebody that definitely deserves a nomination here. But I didn't have like a lot of good names for safety.
I went Julian Love.
Oh, Xavier Watts was Charles Mack's pick. It was Charles McDonald's pick. Hey! So there you go. I mean, hey, perfect.
Perfect. Xavier Watts. I could do that. We can get two safeties out there. I'll go Julian Love, Seahawks. That'll be the other one.
Oh, Julian Love's a good one. Yeah.
Just a great fit for this defense with McDonald because he's so smart and everything. He's the rug that ties the room together for the back end of the Seahawks. They got so many cool players on the back end, like watching Witherspoon and Amanda Worry doing slot stuff. They got cool stuff going on in the back end, but yeah, Julian Love is kind of what ties it all in together. So that was my nomination for this one was him. I wanted to make sure you got a shout out. I actually was going to say Kevin Byard, but he's a Pro Bowler. So
a Pro Bowler. That was going to be a guy I brought up as well. I did not realize, again, a Pro Bowler. So tough scene.
Hey, that's why Darnell Wright not getting it, because Bears are going to pump up their guys, Bears fans. So like that, I'm not shocked when you get those picks that you can do that. But he's been nice this year. So yeah, Julian Love, Xavier Watts. I have no opposition to that. I liked Watts a lot for the Falcons. I thought he had a really quality year. All right, the final team: Mac Jones at quarterback, Parker Washington, Alec Pierce starting at Z and X. Who would be the slot? We can think on that. Kenneth Gainwell / Jalen Warren. The Steelers backfield at running back: Brent Strange at tight end, Darnell Washington at the Y. If you really want it. Then we got the offensive line. We got Patrick Paul, left tackle, Titus Howard, left guard, Zach Frazier at center. We'll ignore the right side, but there's other names we talked about. Derek Hall and Chase Young at edge, Kobe Turner and Tyrae Tarr at D tackle, Jordan Brooks at linebacker, Riley Moss at corner, Jalen Petrie at slot, and then Xavier Watts / Julian Love at safety. I don't know if we're sniffing playoffs. I think we get 7 wins.
Six. We could potentially compete in the playoffs in a bad. We could maybe win the NFC South or the NFC series, South. AFC North. Yeah,
yeah.
We could be involved in a Week 18 game. We could be involved in a Week 18 game that matters, but only because the division stunk.
Yeah, usually the NFC South or AFC South division fight for the last like 10 years. So yeah, one of those two. Yeah, we could compete in that or the new European expansion league that they're going to have sometime in my lifetime when they add 4 teams to Europe because they want that 6:30 a.m. TV slot. It's happening. I don't know if it's 2 years. It's not 2 years. I don't know if it's 5 years. I don't know if it's 10 years. But I don't know. I don't know. Let's get the Concorde going. Let's get those flights going all the way overseas. Make it nice and quick. But that was fun. Our first ever all football 301 team is I don't want to call it the all hipster team. I thought we had some name recognition in there. I would say up and coming players, super role players, gritty players, dynamic, efficient players. That was a lot of fun to talk with Matt. So thank you to him for joining me on this. I'm closing it out today. I'll be back on Thursday with Chuck to preview Wild Card Weekend. 6 games. It's the easiest prep I have. I don't have to pick and choose which games to talk about. Nope, these are the 6. I know exactly when they play. We're good to go. So can't wait to talk about those games this weekend with Chuck. I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on social media. That's Matt Harmon. You can find him at Matt_BYB. Please subscribe to us, follow us, and rate us 5 stars wherever you get your podcasts. Also leave in some comments, replies, all that good stuff. Love seeing those. Watch us on YouTube on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. Make sure to check out the Yahoo NBA channel as well. Thanks to Stone, Awesome Mass, and behind the scenes for making us look and sound good. Thank you all for listening. See you guys next time.